This is Icon Art Radio with Donna Colby, Alan Cobb, and Bill Teeple. That's me. Well, the last show ended on the note that pretty well defined art. We weren't defining art, but we ended up on this point that forgetting the whole concept of art, if someone's action knocks somebody else's socks off, it knocks their socks off, and that's a good thing. That's an experience. Somebody has transferred their experience of having their socks knocked off about something to someone else. And
well, and we've talked in various...
Where did that start?
Well, we've talked in various Odd Thursdays about Calder and his decision to not call what he did art, technically. He kept away from that term, and he totally had
his... So they didn't have to justify what he did as art.
Exactly.
That was his point.
And his socks were knocked off by the most interesting, quaint little things from the time he was a child, from doing, like, wire portraits of his friends. He would apparently carry a coil of wire in his pocket when he went to parties, and if he got bored with the party, he would just, like, make a little wire portrait of somebody who was at the party. And these are, like, absolutely delightful things, many of which are in museums around the world today. And the same with his little circus. And so I think that probably the artist's socks have to be knocked off in order for the viewer's socks to be knocked off, because it's the energy. It seems to me it's like the transferring of that excitement and enthusiasm. Picasso really felt like enthusiasm was the bottom line in art, and that the viewer felt that enthusiasm.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, when I got that stupid 5-foot-long horn working, you know, I actually built the big one first at home, and I was messing around. I didn't know exactly what was required to make it work. And when it worked, it blew my socks off.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, this is great. You know, I got to show somebody.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to throw it into the presentation because it was sort of an example of, you know, how flapping is at the basis of, you know, all sound. But in fact, the real reason that I wanted to include it in the presentation was because it was cool.
And this is a real, this is a good point too, because it's, that tendency to do that is built in to us from a very, very, very early age. Because little kids, you know, how as soon as they can talk, they're running to their mommy saying, look what I made.
Yeah.
Mommy, look what I made. Whether it's a mud pie or a,
yeah,
you know, some kind of a, what looks maybe to the mommy like a big mess, or their first little drawing.
Right.
And then the mommy hangs it on the refrigerator with a magnet, and it's the first little museum experience.
Right. That the museum,
I mean, the refrigerator museum. Format is something we could discuss sometime.
You could do a show at Icon and just cover the walls with refrigerator doors, all different kinds, and then put art on them with magnets.
Which would be a very contemporary installation,
actually.
It would
be very postmodern. A little more postmodern than I would like.
My sister just bought a brand new refrigerator, which has this fabulous design to it. You know, she was so excited about this refrigerator, and she got it home and she called me up and said, the refrigerator looks fabulous, but it's not magnetized.
Yeah, it's not
steel. And
she
had all of these drawings of her granddaughter, you know, that she would put on the refrigerator door, and she said, now I have to put it on the chrome trim on the edges.
Well, if it's not too textured, maybe she can use, you know, post-its or,
right,
you know,
there's still hope for her museum.
Double stick tape.
Well,
so
wait,
where do we go from refrigerator art?
I'm spaced out now. I'm way out there in the refrigerator.
Well, let's talk about Fairfield. Let's talk about, we talked about the culture industry in New York City last time, and hinted at the difference between our cultural scene here in Fairfield. So let's talk about what it is. We mentioned it a little bit last week in terms of art focused on inner growth.
Right. Well, we got to the socks off part. Having gotten to the point that this cutting edge, I'm projecting from my point of view that the defining element in the art of the future will be its enlightenment value. the self discovery that's happening within the artist, and then the expression of that, and that having a quickening value for the society of an enlightened experience and growth. Since most of the people, many of the people that have come to Fairfield have come here riding that train of personal growth and a quest for truth and enlightenment, I think we have a fertile ground for an art form that will be reflective of what will globally be the mark of the art of the 21st century, hopefully, the 21st century. Although time is such an interesting phenomenon, you know, we have no rule over what's going to happen when. All we have any control over at all is our quest of the moment.
Yes, because the whole, as we know, the whole course of action is unfathomable, and any time we try to predict anything or plan for anything, you know, I overheard a conversation between two people in the cafe yesterday, and someone was citing that famous quote that if you want to make God laugh, tell him your plans. And so it's in that sense, I think the scene here in Fairfield, as well as New York and anywhere else, is a dialogue between the artist and everything else that's happening in the whole universe and in their inner life and their outer life both, because none of it is predictable.
We certainly can't predict the exact form that things will take. And we even can't, I'm an optimist, you see. So things are always going forward towards more and greater and happier times, because that's where I'm headed.
And alertness is part of
that. But we don't know. I mean, maybe we'll all go someplace we don't want to go before we get there.
Oh, no, we don't have to think about that. I'm an optimist, too.
Yeah,
but I think that in terms of this relationship to everything that's happening in the world, some people are just prone to focus on fixing the problems, and other people are more prone to just sort of looking at this great big light ahead of them and creating something that's very personal and magical even. And I think we need all of those types of people. But no matter which camp you're in or all of the other gray areas of camps that are in existence, it seems like the most creative people are the ones who are alert to this dialogue and are every day waking up and seeing what life has to offer to them and what they can offer to life and bring it out in whatever their avenue of expression happens to be.
So I think it's a very fertile ground. I think Fairfield's a fertile ground for this to take place. We talked last week about these solid magnetic centers kind of losing their cohesion with and New York having been sort of the capital of the art world in the last 50 years, sort of feeling the cracks forming and what to do about it. The author of that article about that suggests that New York needs to create incentives to keep their artists, the rich resources of artists and their activities there and not going elsewhere. I think it's a formula that we can consider here too. That
yeah,
if the city father, even no matter how small we are, the potential is great. So those who have power and money and all in this town could advance that, and the idea of an emerging cultural economy here by creating incentives, just as Paducah, Kentucky did with a town out just like not a town that was wondering about identity. It was the middle of the country town that was losing its manufacturing and wondering what to do, and they decided to be an art town. So everybody got on board, the city council, the chamber of commerce, the bankers, the landowners, they all got together with this, with one vision to turn it into an art town. And actually within about 5 years, this was in 2000, they decided this, and by around 2005, they were known nationally as an art town, and they had become a magnet for artists. And this isn't the level of the New York artists, this is more of a mid-range kind of even tourist-oriented more market, but they did it through creating incentives to get artists to come there from all over the country.
Well, there's also another possibility too, which is that some bigger event, bigger than any of us, sort of does the shift. Like at Paris was the art center for how long? Centuries. And it was World War II that drove a lot of the artists who were living in Paris to New York. And then from that point, New York became the art center. Well, there's a lot of kind of cosmic things going on right now, like global warming and,
so when, you know, when the tide rises 10 feet, everyone will rush to Fairfield from Los Angeles to New York.
Not that we want that to happen, but I mean, the point is, it could be good.
I mean, you never know.
There could be things like that, but there could also be positive things that are bigger than we can foresee that shift people's attention from one geographical place to another. And as people in Fairfield, I think that one thing we really have going for us here in Fairfield is we tend to have a higher degree of optimism and belief in kind of magical events happening than a lot of people in other places. And I think that's a factor. I think that really does create an energy that can draw unexpected boons.
Well, there's definitely a trend away from the stress of the big city, the decentralization of the big cities, and a lot of people are going to small towns where the life is much more human scale. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, I was interested to discover a couple of years ago, I was going to the Fairfield Concert Association associated concerts in nearby towns, and because I hadn't, you know, been in Iowa very long, and I was interested in seeing what the other towns looked like. And a lot of them have, you know, old opera houses and concert halls and things left over from a previous age. And one of the things that was very interesting and surprising to me was how many people I met who actually had moved to rural Iowa from Chicago. They had visited their grandparents on the farm when they were kids, and when it came time to retire from the, you know, intensity of the city, that was what came to mind. They don't feel isolated when they're this far off the beaten path, because nowadays this far off the beaten path isn't that far off. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, by the time they finish Route 34, we're going to be, you know, a half an hour from Ottumwa, which is substantially bigger, and only, you know, a little more than a half an hour from Burlington, which is the Mississippi and Illinois and, you know, a whole lot more commerce and industry and things. And so, I mean, you really have to, if you wanted to be isolated nowadays, you'd have to really, you know, put some effort into it. And a town like Fairfield is really just on the edge. It's not isolated. It's kind of in between, you know, expanding metropolitan regions. And I think the problem that we have here, if it is a problem, I'm not actually saying that there's anything wrong with it, but Fairfield definitely has a kind of multiple personality quality to it that most towns that I've known don't. You know, an awful lot of towns have stayed the same for a long time. And if you visit one of them, you find something that's predictable and has an obvious kind of cultural coherence to it. Whereas Fairfield has, you know, a substantial population of people who have been here a long time, and some of them want to keep it the same, and some of them want to see major changes. And then there's the additional population of people who moved here for other reasons and have created a sort of secondary community. And they tend to have come from urban areas and from the coasts, and they bring those values and interests with them. So when we, you know, when people say Fairfield wants to be an art town, some of Fairfield wants to be an art town, and some of it couldn't care less about being an art town. Some of it maybe is clinging to the past. Some of it maybe has unrealistic, you know, visions of the future. But what that all spells in terms of the cultural quality of Fairfield is colorful. It's interesting. It's not predictable. If everybody here, you know, if all the people who have moved to Fairfield because of MIU and things like that had just kind of overwhelmed the local community, it wouldn't be anything like what it is now.
Yeah,
so I'm, you know, I'm glad that it's schizophrenic and in that way. I think it's much, much more interesting and much better for everybody.
Well, and I agree. I don't want this to suddenly overnight become your typical tourist art town.
Yeah.
I like the diversity and the dialogue between these groups, and that the fact that we're, the arts tend to be, have tended to be a unifying value, something that everybody can get a little bit of a piece on. And even the people that are the old school, that don't want things to change, they have definitely heard of the art walk that's in their town and other people talking about the town as an art town. So they have to actually have some kind of an opinion, which makes them part of the mix.
Yeah,
and the controversies are actually, I think, stimulating, because, you know, my favorite day in the Fairfield Ledger is Thursday, when the letters to the editor appear. And some of them are very extreme and, you know, opposing something that somebody else wrote last week. But that's the fun part, because you, when you read these things, whatever the opinion is, whichever side of the opinion you happen to fall on, it makes you think. And it makes you aware of how other people are thinking. And sometimes you go, it's like astonishing that someone thinks in that way that's so different from you. And then in other times, you tend to look at the whole controversy from a much bigger perspective. You back up a little bit and you see how both of those sides are equally, you know, there's some truth in each of them, and it's not black and white at all. And so I think you're right that it's the opposites that are making Fairfield an exciting, interesting place to live in.
Well, in permaculture, the most evolution takes place where several systems cross at borders.
Yeah.
So when we have these several strong viewpoints going in one location, which isn't happening in these other small towns around us, it's happening in Fairfield because of something that it's destiny.
And if you take this to, like, if you back up even further and look at it from a bigger scale, then probably all of these different ways of looking at art, the culture industry, as it's called in New York City, and the art that's based on inner growth, and the people who are highly commercialized in a very camp kind of contemporary way, like this Japanese artist you might want to mention because he fits into this story too, that all of those ways, all of those vantage points on art are good and necessary to make the whole field of art thrive and be exciting.
Well, each piece of art, I mean, art is just somebody's expression. Each piece of art represents two eyes and a voice on the world from some kind of center point where it all connects. And it comes around and all meets in this house of mirrors that we call reality.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that we can have strong statements. What we want is many strong statements.
So mention
that's
what
the encouragement
artist.
Of the artist. I'll get there. as many strong statements as possible, that because then we have a really flourishing environment. I'm hedging and hemming and hawing on the artists from Japan, because someone that is supposed to be as knowledgeable as I am in the arts should know this person who has now become world famous, and his name is a little bit on the tip of my tongue. I won't even try. In any case, he's
I could step out of the room for a minute or two and find out.
Well, you could if you feel like a little
longer. We'll have a contest, and the listening audience.
In any case, this person was featured on Ovation Television recently, and he is a phenomenon. He's like the Andy Warhol of today, coming out of Japan, and his art has to do with the merging of the high and low, just as Andy Warhol was, you know, famous for cherishing the beauty of the Campbell's soup can and really making us see that aesthetically and on many other levels too, the significance of nature of our culture of the time. So this person is bringing out art that is almost unrecognizable from commercial toys. He comes out of the anime industry in Japan, which is huge worldwide, and it's a certain kind of look, big-eyed integration of all races into these little big-eyed characters. the Japanese animated movies are, you know, have taken over Disney as the animated movie industry standards. He will make, you know, these just, he makes his own line of toys, he has his own shops, he's sort of celebrating the common culture. So he's kind of breaking, I don't know where this fits in, I mean, you had me mention him, but I'm not quite sure where he fits into our discussion. Maybe you should ask me a question and we can try to pin him into the story here.
Well, what were we talking about before? Because it's hard for me to remember to go back. Well, it's just that there's the whole field of orientation toward art, whether it's coming from a place of what's going on in my inner growth and, you know, my inner necessity is bringing out some particular expression of it. There's that kind of an artist. There are the people who are trying to make a ton of money and be recognized as high, fine artists in New York City. People who want to have, you know, the critics hold them high and maybe wind up in the history books or something. And then there's somebody like this guy who, to me, is as much a valid artist as any of the rest, even though what he's doing is, like Warhol, celebrating something that a lot of people don't think of as art.
Well, I think he's working on this area that we were talking about in the last show about the removal of this word art from the story. And he's brought the sensitivity of the fine art world down to the appreciation of quite a brought it into the mass
culture.
Aesthetics.
Well, no, the flow of commodities. Mm. This flow of commodities to every person in every home throughout the world, he has brought his refined fine art sensibilities to that level. That's really what he's doing. He's also commenting on the nature of culture. He calls he's written a book called Super Flat, and he describes super flat as everything has gotten flattened, kind of superficial. But then he is brought, in a way, he's re-enlivening the superficial by bringing his fine art sensibilities into the superficial.
Like infinity in a grain of sand. You know, you can take anything in creation and
take it to that. I was quite fascinated by this work. I mean, and he had a show at the Museum of Modern Art, and you had these big happy flowers with big smiley faces on them, all very mass-produced. And yet... there was a kind of aha experience that you had the first time maybe you saw Andy Warhol's Brillo boxes or soup cans. It was like, no, this can't be. I walked down the aisles of the supermarket the other day and had a hugely aesthetic experience. And he's like delivering that to us. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you can't get away from beauty. It's everywhere.
Well, and the fact that they're happy faces, I mean, this is another thing where it's like the opposites of our world right now, because there's so much emphasis in the news on the terrible things that are happening and the threats and dangers and all that. And I think there's always has to be a balancing factor in life, and that somebody's focusing on these silly happy faces is a good sign that that element of life is still alive and thriving as well.
He's also making a commentary to what it's come to, happy faces, because apparently these little characters sit in front of major corporations as little logos and businesses in Japan. I didn't realize this stuff.
Yeah.
And so you've got this sort of combination of this like insipid sort of like glossed over happy thing over the like probably the grinding intensity of business, you know, financial matters in Japan. And then you've got these little, it's sort of like, you know, he's asking us to look at this whole phenomenon.
Yeah. Which is, again,
and
like
we'll,
the
and next show, we will actually tell you what this guy's name is, now we've got you interested in this new phenomenon in the art world that everybody should be knowing about. And so if you don't know about this, then it means you're not cool. And
just like all of us who don't know.
Next week and see if you become cool.
If you want to be cool, it's Wednesdays, 8 a.m.
It only proves how provincial we are here in Fairfield, and we ought to forget about thinking of ourselves as an art center, because the real art center, of course, is New York City.
Listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.